So, all right, our only review of the day is going to be for Avatar, The Last Airbender, Book 3. We've been reviewing each book each week there in anticipation for the live-action Avatar, The Last Airbender series coming up. And by the way, we just hit our goal on Twitch of having more than 350 followers. So we're going to be doing a review of M. Night Shyamalan's Avatar, The Last Airbender. There. So we did hit that goal there. So, yeah. Like I said, I've been reviewing each book of Avatar Last Airbender, the cartoon show there, in anticipation for the live-action one coming out on Netflix, which is coming out next week. And, yeah, so this is the final season. Man, I was sad to kind of watch this because it's like, it's over. It's done. You know, I had seen this before, but getting up to the end of it, it's like, man, it's just, it's always sad to let some good peak go like this. Mm-hmm. So in this final season, so kind of in the second season, which we reviewed, and book two, which was Earth, you had it where it was kind of almost like the Empire Strikes Back. Yeah, which Nick made that kind of comparison there of the show where they were defeated, Team Avatar. You had Azula, they, you know, and the Fire Nation conquer the Earth Kingdom, which Bong Sensei, which seemed to be the main hub there, main kind of one of the main defenders against the Fire Nation. So they kind of took it over from the inside. You had Azula almost kill Aang there by shooting lightning at him, which is now blocking his ability to turn into the, go into the Avatar state. You have it where tons of now a lot of the allies of Team Avatar have been captured now in prison. So yeah, they're just kind of on the run basically. They're away from the Fire Nation and trying to figure out a plan of what they're going to do to finally take down the Fire Nation and the Fire Lord Ozai here, who you much more see here in this final season than you do in any other previous season. And you kind of talked about that a little bit of discussing the live action show of how maybe they're going to bring more of a presence to Fire Lord Ozai. What do you think of the show not really too much focusing on Fire Lord Ozai and kind of, you know, kind of saving him for the final season?
I think it's good for the show. And while I do think like there's still like better ways to handle this kind of villain, especially in the third season, his reveal is great, especially how like he doesn't really get revealed until the final, third act. But like, and then like episode one of season three, Zuko finally like confronts his father, and like how it's kind of like just a guy, and that's great. Despite being voiced by Mark Hamill, doesn't have much character, but like still the show does manage to, because it has kind of like cider villains or like villains on the road towards it, like Zhao and Azula and Zuko, were more focused with that. And the show to a degree kind of frames him more of like almost like a in between like a force of nature and kind of a representation of the Fire Nation. There's a bit more mixed stuff with that on my end, with kind of like Ozai's like character. And to be fair, like that's this is a fairly common criticism of the show, like even at the end Ozai kind of like doesn't have much character, and but it does, he does fulfill his role well in the story.
He does. I mean, I kind of wish they'd maybe explored a little bit more of him, because I do think he is kind of just bad guy in it a little bit. I mean, he's a good bad guy, he's a good evil kind of villain there in the show, of kind of a force that they need to fight, and a very deadly force there. And then there's a conversation, kind of a moral dilemma that kind of comes up in this season of whether or not Aang should kill Fire Lord Ozai or not. And especially since in this season you have the upcoming of Sozin's Comet, which is an opportunity where the Firebender's powers increase tenfold when that kind of happens. And it's kind of opposite of what was in Book 2, where they were trying to attack the Fire Nation during the eclipse when the people with firebending abilities lose their powers completely. So that was kind of an opportunity they thought would have been a good strike and get to kind of do that. Also in this book, Aang is trying to find a firebending teacher so he can master the last element there. Interesting because, you know, like I said, each season is named after an element, water, earth, and then this one, fire. He's already mastered air already, being part of the air nomad people. Do you think they should have spent a little bit more time of him learning the element? Because it seemed like, how quickly is he actually learning?
Yeah, that's kind of a thing. I think people forget that Aang, even for an Avatar standard, is kind of a prodigy. because at age 10 he became a master airbender, and even though like all avatars are gifted, even in just a few motions he was able to do a lot of the basics of water bending in Katara, so he's, you know, elevated from that. And then he mastered water bending in a matter of like a few months. And then even though he became like a moderate earthbender, he was still able to master like several like sub techniques of earthbending. And then, you know, he was very proficient with firebending as opposed to like what a lot of people might say, but I think it's something you have to sacrifice when you give it such a, people forget like how short time is in this universe. It's the whole three seasons of Avatar happened in the span of under a year.
Yeah.
Maybe a whole year. I can't recall, but I think it's under a year. And so the characters are like they have to like really, it's one of those things that when you're watching it, you don't really think about, but like when you put it in context, it's like, they're really jumping face for a lot of this. And they're all like, there's not enough time. So yeah. But it does, they're also setting it during Sozin's Comet, and Aang's firebending abilities would be increased. So that is a fun reason as to like why he can probably do a bit more firebending against Ozai than he would be normally. Because, you know, despite, you know, being a firebender, it's not like he's immune to flames.
Right. You're right. Like it takes place like kind of over the course of a little bit over a year or a year exactly, because they have to, because like even in the beginning of season one, they introduce like, we have to do this before the end of like summer comes. Mm-hmm. And if we don't, yeah, before the Sozin's Comet, because that was always like a looming thing there, a threat there, because if they do that, the Fire Nation would be kind of incredibly powerful. And then I was watching a friend of the channel and then a guy that you know, Macabre. Mm-hmm. He also did a discussion about Avatar, where he was discussing like he's basically Fire Lord Ozai is Fire Hitler. I mean, yeah. Fire Hitler, he's trying to go around like his mission is to conquer all these nations. Now he feels like, okay, when this comet is going to come, we're going to dominate everything. And that leaves, he's going to leave his daughter, Azula, in charge of the Fire Nation, her be Fire Lord there. And then with this season also, it's big because you see the switching of alliances here of Zuko, who at first, you know, we saw at the end of season two, he got what he wanted. You know, he, mm-hmm. you know, got back into the Fire Nation. He, you know, got back from being banished. He's his father's right-hand man now. He's on the council meetings, on the war meetings, but he's still not happy, still not satisfied, even with all that. Do you think Zuko probably has the best arc in the entire show?
Oh, definitely. That's kind of even almost like a criticism of the show, of like, especially in season three, is that Zuko's storyline and arc is almost too good. Like, it's way, like, it's so interesting that, like, it takes away almost from the main character's arc. And, you know, and of course, there are other series where it's like, well, I like the side character more, but I don't think it's really done like this. Where Zuko's basically, like, the secondary main character to a degree. The only one that would be maybe a bit more of a main character would be Katara, maybe. But it's like, that's one of the things that everyone takes away from the show, of just like how well Zuko's arc is and how like much it just like almost everything about it is just like perfect. Like anyone who's like made like a video or like research about like character arcs, it's like everything about Zuko's just like done to like it's near perfection in a lot of degrees. And it's like, of course, the main character usually isn't the most main character in a show like this, but it's just one of those things of like, Aang just isn't as interesting or compelling as a character as Zuko. And because Zuko just like, not only does he have all that like bad stuff, but like he also has far more agency. And that's somewhat of a theme of the show, of like the fact that Aang didn't want to be the Avatar. And it was they both have like a destiny thrust upon them. But Zuko's able to have more of a complex relationship with his quote unquote destiny. But yeah, it's one of those things of like, he's like, even if he's not like your favorite character, a lot of people will consider him like the best written character of the show.
Is he your favorite character?
I would say he's probably my favorite character. He's up there. If not, it's probably him or Iroh or Katara.
Okay. I'm going to get into Katara a little bit there. But yeah, Zuko, masterful way his arc was done throughout this whole kind of three seasons here of the way it kind of concludes. Like I said, he thinks he's finally got what he wants, but you do have Uncle Iroh who helped protect Team Avatar at the end of book three there. So that label that got him being a traitor and him being imprisoned. And you see that, you know, you think that he's lost all hope there. But you see old Uncle Iroh can't never get him down. He's able to still kind of maintain that old ways there, which was really great. A great episode here, I think, which is comparable to the really great episode in the last season, Zuko Alone. I think the beach episode, which focused on Zuko, Azula, Mei, and Ty Lee there. And you really get to see explore more of their characters, especially with Azula, who we just kind of saw as being, you know, this really crazy kind of on the warpath villain. As you see, you get a lot more depth of her, especially you see that she actually is a human being and and is just, you know, a girl there.
She is 14. You do forget. I do think the show forgets that as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, she isn't just a war criminal all the time. Yeah. You know, she is also still a girl there, and they do actually have some really great scenes there. Do you have any kind of favorite episode there of this season?
Season three. Let's see. Let's try to thank them. Of course, the Raiders of the Southern Water Tribe. It's up there. Let's see. I really like the first episode of this season. Puppet Master is pretty good, but it's not my favorite. But yeah, I do think kind of a flaw of this season is that it kind of wants to go back a bit to like season one. But we're at the point where it's like that clock hand is just like so close to like zero. It's like, do you guys really have time for this? That's like, you want to have more like fun, almost like filler episodes. That's like, it feels like you're kind of like wasting time here to a bit. I was mainly the thing with like kind of like Aang like hanging out with like the Fire Nation kids. It's like, it seems like there's a more important plot like that you guys should be focusing on, especially with the. That is kind of a big criticism I have of, like, where Zuko's, like, he reveals to the gang that, you know, his dad's going to use the Sozin Comet to just basically burn down the Earth Kingdom. And he was like, I was planning on finding him after the summer. It's like, why didn't you tell Zuko? But it's like, yeah, why didn't you tell them, Zuko? That's, like, super important.
And I think the episode where he goes, like, where, because after they lose and book two, they kind of blend in to, they kind of go undercover as Fire Nation people, like they steal a Fire Nation ship, they wear Fire Nation clothes.
Yeah, I love that first episode. Yeah.
Which they kind of do that there, and then at this point early on in the season, people think that the Avatar is actually dead. People think that Aang is dead and Azula killed him there. So the episode, I'm trying to find the episode actually where he kind of blends in as a kid there. I'm trying to find the exact episode.
It's there. The one, are you talking about the one where like the dancing's band? Oh, the headband. That's what it's called.
Yeah. The headband. I could kind of see that. I mean, even in kind of fillerish episodes of Avatar, it still kind of is important because it still shows like the kids of the Fire Nation and like the propaganda there. They kind of, that gets put upon them and why they believe the things that they believe. And that, you know, he's kind of helping them be kids again. It's like, you know, so he's kind of breaking that out. And also it kind of reminds you that he never really got to be a kid. You know, he's had these kind of great responsibilities kind of thrusted upon him there at an early age. And all of them have. I mean, Katara, Sokka there, you know, basically being tasked with saving the world. And you see that a lot with Katara's character of, you know, very early on in her life after losing her mother, she got thrusted more into, you know,
a mother figure
for the tribe and everything like that. And kind of a lot sacrificed her own needs there, her own kind of desires. And that's even kind of a joke in the series of how they make fun of her for being like the mother of the group there. There's even a riff there between her and Toph, which I think was in
The Runaway.
The Runaway episode there, where basically Toph is scamming, you know, all these people in the kingdom, and there's a wanted post of her, and then, yeah, I mean, it's basically like she's pretty much the mother of the group, the boss of the group, everything like that. And she has some great moments in this season, the Puppet Master episode that you mentioned, where you find out about bloodbending, like the story of that old woman and what she went through. I thought that was kind of similar even to like the Jet storyline in season one. What do you think about Katara's arc here in season three?
I think it's really good. I think a lot of people kind of undervalue Katara, because not only is she like, people say, oh, she's just kind of nice. It's not that she's nice. It's that she's kind of like, she's way too mature for her age. But like you mentioned, it was because it was like thrust upon her and she has to like take all these responsibilities. She's kind of the unofficial leader of the group. Because in book two, like when basically they're in the desert, Toph can't see Aang's mad that Appa's gone and Sokka's like on cactus troops. Katara basically keeps that whole group together and she comes up with like a lot of plans. She's the one who gets us everyone moving, stuff like that. And like, she's not presented as like overly bossy, but it's like, it's one of those things of like, if it was just that, maybe I can see it. But Katara has like genuine angst and like rage deep inside of her with some of her views of like the Fire Nation, like her mother's killer as well, and like the, especially the long grudge she holds against Zuko for like a good amount of episodes, and is until like Zuko helps her confront her mother's killer that she's able to kind of resolve that a bit. And what I really loved about that episode was like Aang's like, you did the right thing, forgiveness is the first step to virtue, like whatever. And then Katara says, but I didn't forgive him, like I'll never forgive him. It's like, yeah, have that character, have that moment, like don't just, she's not just the nice healer, she's like, she might be the second most powerful bender in the group, to be honest.
It's tough because I was watching that video by Macabre, and he was talking about whether or not Katara, like her bending abilities, because there's
an argument.
Oh really? Okay, because in book one you see that a lot of their goal of wanting to go with Aang, Sokka, and Katara is like he's going to go to the northern water tribe and find a water bending teacher, and Katara was like, well, I want to learn water bending as well, and then I also want to go there. And when they get there, obviously there's that situation there where the teacher's sexist and you know, he doesn't want to teach a girl and everything like that. And then he eventually kind of, even though that was kind of weird, the way it kind of is handled there of like, oh, well, hey, you're related to this girl I had a crush on. You know what I mean? So I guess I'll teach you. And even though, like, that's not really too settled. But anyway, but it's like her abilities and skills as the show progresses. I mean, I guess, again, it goes to, like, the level of training that you don't really see that much of in the show. Like, again, with Aang, it's like, how quickly does he learn these elements? Like, you see it. Couple of scenes where he is practicing and he is doing it, you know, but it's like, how quickly does she become, I guess, a water bending master or everything like that?
I do think it's important to know kind of two things. One, like, even from the first episode, it kind of showed that Katara had like a lot of like kind of strength as a bender. She wasn't able to channel the right way. Like, she even like broke that glacier just by like basically yelling at Sokka. So like, and she was trained by herself, so obviously, like, once she got, like, a proper teacher, even Zuko makes that comment of, like, yeah, once you kind of get a proper teacher in this to point you in the right direction, she just kind of, like, skyrocketed it. But, like, I like that her arc is kind of complete by book one, because then she could have, like, more individual arcs and, like, more diverse, like, kind of stories than the other characters. And she's probably, I would say she's probably, like, the most flexible character of the group to put them in, like, different situations. Because Sokka and Toph, you kind of know what's going to happen. It's just going to be mostly comedic and, like, yelling and stuff like that. But, like, Katara can, like, she can have more of a thing with Sokka. She can have more of a thing with Toph. She can have more of a thing with Aang. Of course, she could have a thing with Zuko. And, like, she has, like, she's a very good character as, like, a moderator, almost.
Yeah. And how's it going there, Rated M for Immaturity, man? How's it going there? Thanks for stopping by, man. Much appreciated. She is there. And I think Katara, I mean, I don't know if you were, you know, into it much, like, back when you were a kid or when you were watching it back when it first came on.
I watched the show when it came on. I did accidentally skip an episode, which was kind of funny watching the show back as adults. Like, I don't remember this. but, yeah, it was a two-parter in book one. But, like, yeah. What else was there? But I didn't watch the show, like, week to week. But I did. It was, like, airing when I was young, and I do remember the bloodbending episode, the puppet master episode. That was a big deal, and that was like everyone was like kind of like that was what the kids kind of talked about at school afterwards. Like, god damn.
Yeah. Do you remember anybody? Because apparently, I was looking online. People said that there was a lot of hate at Katara at first. Like, when the first...
I don't remember at first, but I do know, like, kind of now. People are like, she complains so much about her dead mom. It's like, she's 14. Mm-hmm. And also, it's like really not that much, but it's also like it's a motivator for her. Kind of the same of like it is the same as like Zuko's scar or like Zuko talking about his mother as well. Like he has those same kind of angst moments, or like when Zuko brings up his honor, he's really talking about his dad at that moment. He talks about them all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you could say, I mean, it is a big motivator. I mean, everybody has that. I mean, a lot with Zuko is, you know, Scar and his dad and, you know, coming back from being banished. You know, there's Uncle Iroh and about, you know, honor and, you know, tea. And, you know, everybody's kind of got a little bit of their thing that kind of got going on there in the show. So, yeah. And then Radio Immaturity says Zuko definitely talks about his parents.
Maybe.
You would say there. Do you think this being three seasons, you think that's kind of enough? You think they could have maybe done an extra season?
Honestly, I think the first three seasons of Avatar are kind of like the best you're going to get. It's kind of like a happy accident, because originally they did plan for like more seasons and stuff like that. But like, and you can see that in the comics, and like a lot of people are very mixed on the comics, kind of the same as Korra. I'm kind of in between on them, but it's like, I do think it's one of those things of like, hey, you get this amount of time. It's like they were able to squeeze out like three shows, like three seasons, like this good stuff like that. And they, of course, like some wrenches were like thrown into the gears every now and then. Like very sadly, Mako Uematsu, he passed away. He did manage to record all his lines for book two. But it does work out with like kind of them hiring Greg Baldwin and then having Iroh be like imprisoned and kind of like shunning Zuko for a bit, like for a few months or a few weeks. So that works out more. And like that worked out in the favor of the show. There's a bunch of weird stuff in the beginning that they planned for. Like Toph was going to be a boy, and like there's going to be a love triangle between him, Katara, and Aang, and Azula was going to be a boy as well. Like I think he was actually she was Prince Azulon in the original draft.
Oh, okay. Interesting, because when they do that episode, which is the play,
Ember Island Players,
which was really good. Again, that's, you know, great episode of poke fun at the, you know, the fans of the show and then themselves. And there is in that play, Toph is a man, like a big muscular man.
Oh yeah.
In that play there, so that was kind of interesting there. Also, and it kind of brings up in the play, they also do have it where Zuko and Katara are more of a thing than rather than Katara and Aang. Did you kind of see that a little bit more? Like Zuko and Katara kind of could have been a better matchup than.
Oh yeah, I think it's not even the. I think it's just kind of the writers in general. Like romance is not their strong suit. You kind of see this a lot more in Korra, but where romance is more of a big option. But it's like couples in Avatar really aren't that interesting for the most part. I think it also might have to do with the ages, because Aang's 12 and Katara's 14. It's like, I guess that can work, but it's like some anime is able to get away with it because like the characters are like 16. It's like that. It's at that level of like kind of like blossoming into maturity. But it's like when you think of like even Avatar has a joke of it, like in season one where Zuko's like, you're just a child. And then goes, you're just a teenager. it's that's an element. I think it's because also in Avatar, all the characters kind of get paired up with their most like vanilla option, if that makes sense. Like it's almost like first girl syndrome. Like the first girl the main boy talks to, that's the girl he's going to end up marrying. And I do think they do make their relationship more interesting in the following show, Korra, showing like the kind of the flaws of that Aang would have as a parent. But yeah, Katara and Aang's kind of boring. Sokka and Suki's kind of boring for me. Zuko and Mai are kind of boring. I'm not even saying have Zuko end up with like Mai, even like just. Have Zuko end up with like Ty Lee. That'd be interesting.
You had that. Who's Sokka ended up with Suki at the end. Suki at the end, who was the Kyoshi warrior, who makes a return here in season three. Who I thought, you know, to me at the end of, because I was like, man, at the end of season two, I was like, I couldn't remember if she died or not. I couldn't remember that, because at the end there's the whole thing where she takes over and impersonates the Kyoshi Warriors. Did the rest of her team die?
No, they were in a different prison.
Okay. They were in a different prison. She's the one that the Kyoshi Warriors were the one that told Sokka's dad about him and everything. Think about the pairings. They did. Also, there was apparently people kind of were thinking maybe Aang and Toph could have been a thing.
I mean, they are closer in age. 12 and 10. And Sokka's probably still with Suki. It's been a while since I've read the comics, but I do know there was like a weird rough patch with them, and like Suki's like kind of flirting with Zuko. And like there was like a moment of like an implication that Zuko might have gotten with Suki, but you know, that's weird.
And you see kind of like, we're going to get into a layer about like all the fates of the characters.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of in the final episode there. But yeah, I love, you mentioned the Puppet Master episode. Yeah. You have Katara who learns about the story of this woman. And then this was when we get the introduction to bloodbending. Which is going to be especially important later on in the sequel series, the legend of Korra there, of a certain villain there. I never got your opinion on Legend of Korra. What's your thoughts on Legend of Korra?
I like it. It's undeniably flawed, and it's super like fun to talk about. But like, I really like Korra. I do get there is a bunch of issues with it, but like some of it is overblown by like angry fans. Some of it isn't. Actually, me and a buddy actually did a podcast not too long ago. More so talked about kind of like the making of Korra and like kind of the themes and representation of it. And like, you know, we were able to talk about like what she does, what Korra does better than like Avatar. And we came up with the great title, She's Incorrigible.
Watching this series, it does make me want to go back and watch it because it's been a minute since I've seen it, so I've forgotten a lot of things about it. So after finishing Avatar, it doesn't make me want to go back. And this was the spinoff sequel series that set 70 years after the events of the first one. And I think right now she is still the current Avatar right now. Korra is.
They are kind of talking about making another Avatar with an earthbending one that might be set in the future. But like everyone's like, very few people know what's going on with that.
And I think because only one of the creators from the first show worked on this one. Like, didn't the creator, like, one Mike of them Dante? Left? Yeah, I think one of them left, like, halfway through.
Right? I could see that there was definitely issues, like, halfway through the production of it. And to be fair, Nickelodeon did not give the show any favors, because originally it was like, we want a sequel to Avatar. It's like, okay, but it's like, you get one season and it can't. And they're like, okay, it's like so they wrote one season, but then they also said like, now we want like three more seasons, but they can't be like an overarching plot like the first Avatar. So it's like they had to make more like three individual like storylines and threats.
It does make me want to kind of go back and watch that one. But yeah, I do love the beach episode, and I do love the Puppet Master episode, which were done by Joaquin Dos Santos, who also did the Spider-Verse my movie as well. So yeah, shout out to him. He also worked on that. You see a lot of kind of really good kind of people. Dave Filoni, he did a lot of the episodes of the first season there. People know as a Star Wars guy, he did a lot of work on Star Wars there. So
totally fits his MO.
Yeah. Rating for Maturity said Greg Baldwin stepped up as Aku as well later on.
Oh yeah. You just kind of gotta get the guy. Because he's kind of close as you can get to Mako now. But yeah. And he has a lot of fun with it, so that's good.
Talk about some of our favorite episodes. Do you have any real kind of weaker episode of this season?
This season? Nightmares and Daydreams, I would say, was probably the worst one. Because I get that it's like an anticipation thing, but it's like it's fairly dull. It's like, yeah, we know Aang's stressed about fighting Ozai. And stuff like that. And I just didn't find the dream sequences interesting. I didn't find the comedy that funny. Sokka's Master, I wasn't a huge fan of. Because it's like, it almost feels like a way of just setting up the White Lotus. And like, I think in rewatch, I don't think Sokka's as strong as a character as some people make out. I don't think his arc really works as well as like some of the others, like Zuko or Aang's or Katara's. I'm trying to think.
You're saying Sokka's arc didn't work as well as...
No, yeah. But also, not because it's a... But it's like, it's weird that the... I don't remember the name of it, but there's a two-parter of like a prison island. It's where they go to Alcatraz, basically. Like, the Boiling Rock. And it's like, that doesn't feel like it should be two parts.
Yeah, and that's where they go and kind of, he's going to go and break out his dad.
Yeah.
And it almost becomes a joke that everybody has these life-changing experiences going with Zuko, like Katara, Sokka, Aang, you know, they all have these. Toph was like, I want to go, I want to have a life-changing experience with Zuko there.
I want to go on the trip, yeah.
Where, he goes to break out his dad, and then he also, Suki's there as well, so he goes to break them out. And some pivotal things happen in that episode.
I think, the most it kind of does is kind of lead up to the next episode where it's revealed that Azula has a bunch of warships, like improved warships, that are like, you know, it's going to be used during the Sozin's Comet.
And then with that episode, Boiling Rock, you also see May and Ty Lee betray Azula there, and that kind of starts the descent of her going to madness even more there, where she kind of loses her two best friends. And Raiden Petruni says they're only crushes at this point, in reference to when we talk about the relationship. And then Raiden Petruni says, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't the creators consulting on the M. Night movie one of the reasons the show didn't keep going? Like, they didn't have time to do both or something like that?
Maybe. I don't remember that. But it's also like, in fairness to the M. Night movie, I don't think... It's almost like David Lynch's Dune movie, to a degree. Like, if you want to fit everything, the Dune book, into that movie, it's just like a Herculean task that I doubt, like, it's not going to make any fan happy. Like, any hardcore fan. It's just kind of same with the M. Night Shyamalan movie. It's like, I remember, there's behind the scenes where he's like, I really wanted to add, like, Kyoshi Warriors and, like, other episode stuff, but he's like, I just didn't have time.
So this was never planned to be like a trilogy. It was only planned to just, they were just kind of going to just do one movie, or was it planned to actually them to do a trilogy?
I think it was planned for them to do a trilogy. But it was like, with each movie would be like, a whole book. And the girl from the Transformers movies, isn't it? The one who plays Mark Wahlberg's daughter.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Apparently her dad's like a Subway CEO or something.
Oh, yeah, I heard that it was like the producer's kid. That's the reason she got in the movie or something. Or he was like a high profile guy. Yeah. And then
I love the costumes in this. They look great. And I like the guy who plays Iroh. He does a very good job. And same with Zuko's actor.
And who's Dev Patel in this?
Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah. Who's going to be Monkey Man? He's going to be in an action movie.
Yeah. Produced by Jordan Peele.
Yeah. It looks badass. It looks really cool. I can't wait to see that. You saw that kind of the boiling, like I said, kind of Azula descending into madness. That was kind of like the start of it there, because she's so used to having people fear her and be scared of her there. And part of that reason, the betrayal, is that May, you know, she's siding with Zuko, who turned his back on the Fire Nation. She's in love with him. Ty Lee being a friend of May, because Azula and her were about to basically square off, and then May used her kind of
chi blocking
abilities there, which I like that they weren't also benders like May and Ty Lee. They had their own like unique set of skills, like May with the knives and Ty Lee with the more, you know, kung fu type ability there, the chi blocking karate there stuff, which I thought that was really good there. What do you think about Azula's arc here? You know, because some people kind of complain of like they just kind of just made her crazy here, and then at the end, and that wasn't really that satisfying. What do you kind of your point?
I think it works well as kind of a thing of two things: of one, of someone who puts so much like insane pressure on themselves and such high expectations with their family. But I do think it also works with Azula is like definitely a her character, but like how well, like almost a, like a reflection of like kind of paranoid world like dictators and like warlords in the past, of like especially during the last scene, of like her downfall isn't much of a character like Zuko or even like say Jinx from Arcane, but much more so it's far closer to like say Ivan the Terrible or Alexander the Great, of like just falling into a state of depression and like after putting so much pressure, like not being able to open up to anyone, and like they just lash out, and at that moment it just like it fails for them, and so they don't know how to like respond back, and she's just like she kind of just ends up like just as like a like she does this to herself, but that is somewhat the tragedy that she wasn't able to see this coming. Because I kind of view Zula as a character who's gotten pretty much everything she's wanted growing up, as long as she kind of proved to be a great general and like a great like quote unquote child for Ozai, like a soldier. But then it's like reveal like what's going to happen when you give that child so much expectations and so much weight. Like eventually, like something's going to like snap, and like she's kind of crushed under the weight of her own like expectations of herself, which is why she's like I can't trust anyone, it's all about me, but that's also like her downfall.
And Ray Fatrice says it's kind of like she crumbles on the expectations while Zuko finds peace by discarding the expectations there. That you see, I mean I think that's a good point. I mean she, so much pressure is on her.
You've seen Kung Fu Panda, the first one, right?
Yeah.
It does remind me a lot of like kind of Tai Lung's backstory. More like he's like, I know I'm the Dragon Warrior. He puts like, I'm going to be this. But then like he was told he can't be the Dragon Warrior. It's like, no, you can't do it. And it's like that set him over the edge, because he's like, I trained my whole life for this. And I trained until like my bones crack. Was it all for nothing? And so that's why he just lost it against like Shifu. Just kind of written on that rampage. He's still in the raw, but you kind of understand like why all that pressure would just like drive him to that point.
And basically we see with kind of Zula at the end, she just kind of gets, locked up in kind of a mental kind of institution there, asylum basically.
Like straight up an asylum. Like she's even in a straitjacket in the comics.
So that's kind of the fate of kind of her character there at the end of there. You mentioned kind of one of your worst episodes with the Nightmare and Dreams episode. So that's where Aang kind of goes off on a spirit kind of quest journey where he's trying to decide whether or not he should kill the Fire Lord Ozai.
No. That's the one before the invasion of the Black Sun.
That is the one before the invasion of the Black Sun there, where they're doing that. And that's where they kind of get tricked there. And they knew the invasion was already going to be coming.
Yeah. I love that.
What was the episode where he was figuring out whether or not he should do that?
I think it might have been the start of Susan's comment or the first one.
I think it is.
I don't remember what it's called, but it's like maybe it's called the Fire Lord or something. But it's where Zuko's like right after the Amber Islands play, or like Zuko's like, why you guys aren't doing anything? Like, why aren't you like, making a move or like getting ready to fight Ozai? It's like the comet's coming. And like, Aang's like, I'm not going to fight Ozai during the comet. If I fight him now, we'll lose. But then Aang kind of vanishes. But it's like, all that stuff is good, but it's like, people, like, I do get why people are the climax was kind of weak of how he beats Ozai.
And that episode, with Sozin's comment part one, the Phoenix King.
Is
what Ozai
dubs
himself there when he is going to take over everything there, the Phoenix King. So that's the episode. He goes and talks to his other past avatar selves. He talks to Kyoshi, talks to the other waterbending avatar. I'm blanking on his name at the moment.
Karuk.
He talks to the Fire Nation avatar before him, that was immediately before him.
Roku,
which a good flashback episode there they did, showing like his backstory and how he was actually best friends with the grandfather, the great grandfather of Zuko there. Which was nice. That was pretty cool. And that, do you think it was too much that they made it where Zuko was related to the Avatar?
Yeah, a bit. Because the whole talk is like, Zuko, that's not your destiny. Your destiny isn't like determined by it, and you don't have to follow your father's orders. But it's like, actually, the whole time your destiny was to serve. It was actually to help Aang, because you're the great, 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 great grandson of Roku.
So I thought that was maybe a little much there for them to kind of connect that. So he goes and And he even asked the Air Nomad avatar before him, Yang Chen. It's like, okay, so what should I do? Should I kill Ozai or not? And then all of them pretty much agree, like, yeah, you should just smoke him.
Pretty much.
They all just basically, yeah, I pretty much agree with that. Even though with some of them, like Yoshi, who's the only one we've seen probably the most of as an avatar, flashback.
Yeah. Other than maybe Roku, it's either her or Roku.
Who's between those two, we've seen most of. And she did have a run-in with, like, Chin, the Emperor, who we saw in that episode there. Mm-hmm. I think it was in Book 2, which was the Avatar Day.
Yeah.
Was there where they kind of put him on trial there, which she kind of didn't really kill him. No. It really, she just kind of split the place there.
But she's like, I would have, but it's like, you didn't. It's kind of a problem in Avatar, the whole series of as a general, that it does kind of end up taking a bunch of responsibility off the Avatar, weirdly enough. It's like, you actually don't know how to do it. Like, even the Kyoshi novels, weirdly enough, where it's like, oh, this is a darker take on the series and stuff like that. Like, Kyoshi, she might kill, or, like, she might have more complex themes. And it's like, kind of, but at the end, it's like, she doesn't really kill. It, at best, it's like manslaughter or, like, super self-defense. and, yeah, it's that's actually why I liked kind of, like, Korra's take on Korra as the Avatar, especially as a political figure, and, like, because news is traveling so much more in Korra and stuff like that. And, like, there's a lot more debate about the Avatar's, like, purpose in that series. The Avatar now would probably, like, not exist, like, with social media being what it is.
And he'd get canceled or something.
Canceled.
Like, this house and destruction and everything like that. Yeah. It's like, man, do we really still need the Avatar? So it's kind of interesting. Yeah, that goes because you've read the comics.
I've read most of the comics, and I have read the Kyoshi books, which I would say are probably the second best, like, Avatar material out there, other than the main show.
So do the other Avatars feel different from each other when you go back?
Kind of. But is also, like, one of those things of, like, they kind of have they always have the same moral framing as the show of, like, never ever is killing, like, a super bad evil person like that justified. There is a kind of, like, an oh shit moment where Kyoshi's, like, spoiler for the Kyoshi novel that people probably aren't going to read, but it's like she's agreed with this people, like, oh, I'll help you. They're like, we'll help you if you do this. And they're like, okay, I'll do that. And it's like, you have to assassinate a mayor who's, like, doing all this, like, vile shit. And she's like, yep, I'll do that. And it's like, but then she gets there, and, like, the political figure is actually a child, like a spoiled child who's, like, taking all the taxes. Like, oh shit, is Kyoshi gonna kill a kid? And no, she just scares him. But
he's a little Joffrey or something.
A bit, but it's a bit more of a child of, like, no, I don't want to do it. I don't want to give money to the people or whatever and stuff like that. Yeah, it's like, I have to remind myself that, like, even though the Kyoshi novels are, like, 14 plus, like, or stuff like that, they're not going to be, like, berserk or anything like that. Whereas, like, you have to debate with these more, like, harsher moral stances, or, like, Attack on Titan, where it's like, is it more moral to kill this person right now?
So do you think it was pretty good bet? Because the way he kind of gets out of killing Fire Lord Ozai Aang is he learns energy bending from, like, the turtle, and then he ends up just taking away Ozai's bending ability. Do you think that was pretty good conclusion?
I think that's fine. I think it's a fine conclusion for this and the show. I won't say it's bad. I would say, like, there could have been a more interesting thing done. Even there's potentially, like, I was actually talking to Mac, and he brought this up of, like, what if Aang just learned, like, he clapped his hands, and basically there was a flash, and Ozai was gone. Not even, like, dead. Like, well, if he just vanished to the spirit world and was just trapped there. But it's like, that's essentially killing him in the show. He's like, I did that to, like, take away, to make sure, like, he wouldn't be able to threaten anyone anymore, or, like, use his power as a dictator. Because the problem is also, like, it's kind of the problem you run into when you stumble into, like, a fantasy action show of, like, or, like, a JRPG of, like, where the villain is technically the emperor and the king. But throughout it, when they're, like, technically most of the bad stuff they did, but was because they just gave orders which is actually something that's explored in the comics a bit more, that there's like Ozai followers and like diehards. But it's like, it is a kid show, which is kind of an excuse, but it's a very smart kid show. So it's like, it can't really get into that level of talking about like, hey, Ozai never really did anything himself before the Sozin's comment. He really just like, if anything, Aang has to deal with the generals and shit like that. But like, you know, it's, that's probably not going to get explored at, during a kid's show, especially at that time.
Yeah. And sometimes there was death in the show because Jet was killed in book two. So there was that.
Also, it was the last episode. I do think you can probably get away with killing him.
What, Ozai? Or
yeah, because that's the last episode of the series. It's like, yeah, why don't you just have Aang kill him? Like, not even like cold blooded, but
yeah. Well, I mean, I know he does. I mean, did you like him also when he stuck around in the comics, and then he like Zuko was able to ask him about his mom and everything like that?
Ozai is definitely more interesting in the comics, but he's like, he's fine for the most part. And there is a somewhat nice resolution with Zuko's mom. I don't remember her name. But it's like, yeah, it's one of those things of like, when you kind of dissect the final, how Aang gets that energy bending, stuff like that, and like how the resolution's formed, it doesn't crumble, but it's like, hey, there's more good than bad here, but it's not like awful bad.
Ray from Trudy said it's like when Marvel tried to retcon Peter Parker's parents have been S.H.I.E.L.D. agents killed by Red Skull.
I think he was talking about when we brought up Zuko being like Roku's grandkid. Yeah.
And then Ray from Trudy also said if that kid was Joshua, he would have cut his head off there. He also said in the Ember Island play, don't they make a comment on how Jet's death was ambiguous? A little bit. There's a line I think Sokka says, like, I guess.
It was really unclear.
Yeah, it was kind of unclear there. I guess they didn't want to fully commit to it or anything. But I think it was that he died. Because there was that line by Toph who said that he was lying.
Yeah.
So I think he did die there. So you said that, so book three was a little bit weaker maybe for you, maybe trying to go back to season one. Where would you, how would you rank the seasons?
Book two, maybe book three. And then book one. I say book one and three are kind of like a toss-up because book one is pretty good for a kid show. It does have like some like really great episodes, but there's really just kind of like two that kind of come to mind. No, I'd say it's fair saying book two, book three, book one. Because like it's book one does also have the thing of like it's a kid show starting out for the most part. And a lot of people were even like, the show doesn't really get good until the storm, where we find out a lot about like Aang's past and Zuko's past as well.
That's pretty much how I would kind of rank the seasons as well. And I think season one of Avatar, the characters that you meet there, a lot of the kind of episodic kind of feel of it, like adventure of the week type thing does come back into play book three, because you see a lot of the characters that you met in book one come back here. Like for instance with the White Lotus, like you've seen King Bumi and you see the sword teacher there, the sword master there, Sokka come back, be in this and then make an appearance there. Did you kind of like that with the White Lotus and then some of the characters from book one coming back?
I liked it I thought it was fun for the most part. It's one of those things of like, it's kind of hard to determine like Iroh's age, because when I first watched the show as a kid, I thought Iroh was like Zuko's grandfather, just because of like the grayness in his hair, stuff like that, like his look. But it's like, it's just, he probably just aged faster than Ozai.
Yeah, because I don't know how much older he's supposed to be than Ozai. I don't know.
I think like 10 years. 10 years. But okay. Yeah, so it's a bit unclear in the show. So that's up. I think it's like, when I rank them, it's not like, oh, I think book three's got awful. I think book three is good, but like, and like, I think book one is like, yeah, pretty good as well, but it's just like book two is like definitely that show and like kind of the creator's peak as well of like, this is like it's such like a good moment and all that stuff, and like it has all the some of the most impactful, like, dramatic scenes in the show and stuff like that. Like, this episode, Zuko alone, like, I remember a lot of people rank that as, like, their favorite episode, which is fascinating because it's not really a plot-driven episode at all. You could technically cut out this episode and, like, no information will be lost, but it's just so well done in, like, a character exploration of Zuko, like, his past and, like, his mentality, that, like, it just kind of, it just works perfectly.
That's pretty much how I would rank it there. And I think a little bit I'd rank, why I would rank two above three is because I think also three is missing a lot of Uncle Iroh, who I think is missing him very much so there. And then book one, where I rank book two over book one, is book one does have a lot of adventure of the week type stuff there. A lot of like, okay, there, what are we going to do? And going to all these different places, which again, does add back up if, you know, back to book three, they have them having all these adventures and meeting all these different places and seeing what the Fire Nation has done, you know what I mean, to all these different places.
Oh, yeah.
Kingdom. So I think that's very necessary. But
book two definitely becomes more complex and like its political themes and like heaviness. And I'm not saying Avatar is the best when it comes to that. There are, you know, shows and series I would say like tackle politics much better, like with much more nuance. Not just because it's a kid show, just because it's kind of my opinion on like creators a bit. But like, I do like book two is where like things get a bit heavier and stuff like that. And like, it definitely has the biggest oh shit moments of the series.
Yeah, like that moment right there. Yeah,
yeah, where, yeah, yeah, where Azula stops Aang's heart.
Which, and again, that adds because you learned about like if he dies in the Avatar state, that's it.
Oh yeah,
there's no more Avatars after that. Which adds that. So what will be your final thoughts and rating for book three of
Avatar? Book three, I think book three is like a very good story. I do think it suffers from final act syndrome that happens in like a lot of series where like the climax or the third final part or like the final season of a show might be the least interesting. This happens with a lot of shows, such as like, you know, Breaking Bad. It happens with that. Kind of happened with The Wire, I think. I know I'm listing like adult shows, but like, yeah, in general, there are, I loved how it wrapped everything up. Well, wrapped up most things while still leaving like some possibilities for an adventure in the future more. I do think the climax is weak, especially compared to book two. But I do think the climax is better than book one. And I think Zuko's arc is pretty much near perfection.
Mm. Yeah. And do you like all the endings for the characters?
Yeah, I'd say mostly, especially with like how Korra expands some of it. I'm trying to think if like there was a character in the show I do think Aang kind of like the ending of like how book three left of like, we're all done. Like we stopped Ozai, and Zuko gives that speech of like, there's now peace among the land and stuff like that. Like even though nobody worked, it's like, we're all harmony. I do think that's a bit weak as like, I do think it almost ends on like too much of a happy note. Like, it's like, I do think there should be a framing of like, we have more work to be done and stuff like that. But you know, again, kids show, but you know, sort of, it's still better than most kids shows, so it's like I give it half a punishment you would of like a normal show.
Ray from Maturity said the scene when Zuko apologized to Iroh might be my favorite moment in the whole series. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a beautiful moment,
really great. I think mine would be when Zuko is like with Appa and Iroh has to just give that speech to him. It's like, is this really what you want? Like, make up your mind.
Yeah. That was, I mean, they are always really great moments. Mm-hmm. Iroh is one of the MVPs of the show for sure. And they says, what do you guys think of Ozai as a villain? I think he's just okay.
Fine. I think he's a less, I think there is a more interesting version of this villain out there. I've seen like a bunch of Emperor villains that are done a lot better. If I were to like list a villain I think was done better, I would say Lord Shen from Kung Fu Panda 2 is just like perfect. In my opinion, it's like just a way better Ozai than this Ozai. And like they both even have like the Japan theme of like basically being the three alls policy and stuff like that. And like very much a metaphor for like Japan's invasion of China. But everything about Lord Shen is just like Oh my god, what a great villain. Like, I would consider him one of the best villains, weirdly enough. Like, even if you compare him to, like, not just anime villains, but just villains in general, like, from books and from movies. Like, everything about him just, like, is perfect. Just the design, the voice, the motive, the way he moves. Yeah, there was a behind the scenes, it's like, Lord Shen was so complicated to animate because he was, like, animating six characters all at once.
And I finally saw this for the first time. Kung Fu Panda 2. I'm going to be in my review of it tomorrow. And then Lord Shen in this, who's the villain of this movie, voiced by Gary Oldman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he's a peacock.
Yeah.
In this. Let me see if I can get some of him in the trailer here, if I can find him a little bit. A little bit in the trailer.
Yeah, trailers do not do these movies justice.
Yeah, it seems like he's not really much in the trailer. But yeah, he's like a peacock there. Villain has also kind of like a similar kind of fate there of like, hey, he's, you know, destined to like, hey, you're going to be defeated by a warrior, black and white.
Yeah.
And then that leads him to basically almost genociding all the pandas there that you kind of see.
And he is way more like both of them. Also, just he has that moment with Poe at the end where he's just like, how'd you do it? It's like, you know, just keep your shoulders loose. You got to stay on your toes. It's like, not that. How'd you find inner peace? I took everything away from you. It's like, scars heal. It's like, they don't heal, but they shape. It's like, you gotta let your pain go to a degree.
Yeah. And this is, good design, though.
Right? Oh, yeah. Like, both threatening, funny, and, like, I love his, like, his talons, stuff like that. And, like, the fact that his feathers even look like the Japanese flag a bit.
Oh, yeah, they do. Oh, yeah. That is really nice. Yeah, so, yeah. I like that. I like the design of the character, too.
Oh, yeah, they're all good. It took me a while to notice that Poe technically has a mustache for a panda. He has a bunch of like little black dots.
Oh, got the little peach fuzz on there.
Yeah.
So Ozai is just okay.
He's fine. He's a serviceable villain for this kind of series.
That's about it. So Aang, obviously he beat the Fire Lord, took away his bending ability, put him in prison. Azula got put in prison. She got put in an asylum. You see that Zuko, he became the Fire Lord, he took over the nation, then he's gonna lead the nation into peace. Then he ended up with Mei,
there. Maybe. He had a kid, but we don't know with who.
Okay, yeah. Maybe he ended up with Mei there, so I think, okay. Then, Ty Lee, she ended up being a Kyoshi warrior. Then with Aang, he ended up with Katara at the end.
Had a bunch of kids.
Had three, right? Had
three, yeah, three.
And then eventually had some great grandchildren there. But I don't think he wasn't alive to see it. Was he alive?
He was not alive to see his grandchildren.
Okay. So there was that. Then what happened with Toph? She ended up, I guess, becoming.
She opened a metal bending school eventually when Zuko and Aang made an agreement to basically make Republic City. She became the metal bending police chief.
Yeah. And then I kind of talked about that a little bit online and said whether that was in character for her to be.
I say it's a bit more in character than people would think. Because it's kind of like Toph doesn't like to be coddled, but she does also like to be in charge. So it's like, yeah, I don't see this as like a huge stretch. Sokka became a judge. I'm not sure what else he did.
And I don't think he didn't have any kids.
As far as we know, he has no kids.
Yeah, and I don't know if he married Suki or not. I don't know.
Yeah, it's left ambiguous.
And
Katara, she's one of the few characters still alive by Korra, where she's like, she just resides in the Southern Water Tribe for now. And, you know, she was actually Korra's mentor. that was cool and stuff like that.
Toph is still alive. Zuko is still alive. I think Zuko's the only male member of he's still alive.
I assume Sokka was killed.
I think maybe implied that he died or he's murdered or something. I think that's what's kind of maybe implied. But yeah, so that's pretty much the fate of kind of pretty much most people. Then of course Uncle Iroh, he probably passed away.
Oh yeah,
he passed away.
He will, but yeah, he will, like, even just from like natural causes probably.
Yeah. So you had that. So. What would be your rating for book 3? Would you give it like a peak or
just a cinema? I would give it a This Is Cinema.
This Is Cinema. Okay. And then Ray Fury says, doesn't Aang like choke to death on a wall?
No. He just dies because he was basically in the Avatar state when he was in the iceberg. And that exuded so much energy that when, like, it basically cut his lifespan a bit. So that's why he dies very young.
Yeah. Because I think he died when he was like 60.
60? It had to be 60.
Yeah. So that's why he kind of died a little bit earlier than maybe some other people. Yeah. Because he was in the Avatar state for over 100 years.
Frozen.
So biologically, like, he was like 100 and plus years old.
Yeah, it's like some versions of Captain America were like, after like some time, it's like, yeah, the super soldier kept him alive in the iceberg, but after some time, he just passed.
So for me, I would also give it a peak. I'd give it a high peak. I mean, I can see your problems with the ending there, of kind of how it wraps up everything. Maybe it is a little too kind of like, hey, everything's good, everything's all right now.
Yeah. I think my problems are, when I bring up my problems, it's mainly because so much has been said about Avatar. It's such a good show that it's like, yeah, here's some stuff that like a lot of people don't talk about, but like I do understand why the show still has such an impact with people to this day, like why so many people are like close to it.
It's an amazing show. I mean, definitely one of the best animated shows ever, or just one of the best shows, period. I mean, it's got a lot of great arcs in it, got a lot of great episodes in it, great dialogue, great emotional moments.
It was funny seeing, basically, because it blew my mind that Mac had never seen the show, because he would have been like the perfect age to watch the show when it came out. But, if you want to check out his video, it's great on it. It's an interesting video of like someone with like fresh eyes kind of watching the show and kind of like his take on it. It's just like a show that has like a almost like perfect series, but dang it, just check out Avatar, folks.
Yeah,
or rewatch it, because I know most people who watch this would have watched it at one point, but it's like one of those things that like you can like it as a kid, but as an adult, like you can appreciate it way more.
It still holds up. It still holds, even as an adult.
Even just look at this animation, it's just beautiful.
It's hard to replicate something like this, maybe in a TV show, like the how you do the martial arts, then plus the bending and the special effects. It's maybe hard to do that in a live action format, but we'll see if they can maybe do it in the live action show.
Who knows? Might be great.
Yeah. Did you see that clip of on the live action show? Yeah, Boomy. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's just kind of the thing that you run into of like that's just the limitations of live action for now. And like even with like Boomy's whole like deal of like old man who's secretly jacked, like that's a very like Master Roshi kind of transformation. But one of the benefits of like comics and animation is that like you can have like such a scrawny character take on that physique and have it look more jarring. But then in this, it's like, yeah, you're not going to get that level of intimidation. Just his boulder looks way slower. Then again, most trailers like aren't that great nowadays. So that might be a thing. I mean, I hope the whole cast has fun. I hope this attracts more people to Avatar. We can like see, like they can see like other Avatar stuff, like maybe the books, or like I hope it attracts people to Korra, because I remember when Korra came on Netflix, like that went to the first of trending, but it dropped fairly quickly.
And this is a little bit of it right here that you see.
Oh yeah, look at that. Yeah, was this delayed or something? Wasn't there like an issue with that? Like, if it's meant to come out sooner, about like,
the show. I think so. I didn't hear anything about it being pushed back.
Okay,
I think it's coming out when it's supposed to.
Yeah,
at least I could be wrong, but yeah.
It's a great show. Do you have any hopes of anything they change from it from the original source material? Something to improve on.
Well, I think Ozai would be good to improve on that. You introduced him earlier. It is played by Daniel Day Kim, so maybe they'll give him a lot.
He's been getting a lot of memes as of late.
Yeah, a lot of people thirsting over Fire Lord Ozai, so there's that.
Yeah.
And good for him. He's like in his 50s, I think.
Yeah. I do wonder if they're going to kind of tackle Iroh in a different way, kind of show more of his flaws as a person, because the show does kind of gloss over the fact that he was a Fire Nation general for a long time. Like people would, like, if Iroh was a real person, he would definitely be part of, like, the Japanese Sino War, where he was part of some bad war crimes, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but... Yeah, it's just one of those things, but, like, yeah, I'm hopeful for it. I'm hopeful it's good. I love the cast. The cast looks great. Danny Pudi's gonna be in it. The guy from Community.
Oh, yeah, he's gonna be the cabbage guy?
No, I think he's the inventor. Like, the guy
who... Oh, the inventor. Oh, right.
Eastern or Western Temple?
Where, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. The ones that took over the Air Nomad. Yeah. And kind of took over there, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, that'd be awesome. See, this, yeah, it's got some decent cast, yeah, people there that you have in the show. Like I said, yeah, that would be good. More of like Uncle Iroh, his war criminal history, I guess, showing that. Because he was like, what was his nickname?
The Dragon of the West.
The Dragon of the West.
And like maybe. The Breaker of Ba Sing Se or something like that.
Which I don't think they're probably going to get into all that in only 8 episodes. It's kind of tough to do all that.
Yeah, of course. And I have sympathy for the writers, of course. Like, goddamn, streaming services have kind of wrecked the romance of television to a degree. Of like, that's why we can't really have a sitcom nowadays of like a proper good like office level sitcom, because nowadays the standard is so insanely high that you can't really plant a seed for it to grow. Like, a lot of people forget, like, because when people bring up like sitcoms they really like, they bring up like, I don't know, like The Office, and of course there were like exceptions like Arrested Development, but it's like a lot of the most iconic sitcoms kind of like grew over time. Like Seinfeld is a great example. Like, you need to have it should be okay for a show to have like a rough first start. But now we're at that level of like, I won't put it all on like the Stranger Things, but like, because Stranger Things was so popular and had like 8 episodes, Netflix and like streaming services are like, you have to have that level of popularity or else like we're gonna can your show right away. It's like you should allow failure with your sitcoms to a degree. It's like it will overplay, because that was my... Have you seen Blockbuster, that sitcom on Netflix?
Was that the one with who was the
Randall Park?
Randall Park, was that
Jamie Smith was in it,
and the girl from Brooklyn Nine-Nine was also in it, right?
Yeah. The thing is, I like this cast and all that stuff. It's like, and the sitcom, it was not a good show. It was unfunny, save for Jamie Smith. But it's also like, I can totally see a sitcom growing off this. Like, this is like prime Office material. But it's like, just because it didn't get those numbers, it's like we have to cancel it right away. And yeah, I even made this point not today of like, his Venture Bros had its 21st anniversary, and that's, if I were to list my shows, Venture Bros might be my favorite show of all time. But the thing is, the first season is definitely the rockiest season of Venture Bros, but it's like, because it was able to plant and like the creators were able to learn from the mistakes, like then they were able to like grow from that. But like, we just never get that opportunity with sitcoms or TV shows anymore. Even with like, because people brought this up with like Has-Been Hotel, like it only has 8 episodes, but it's like, yeah, you should probably give the creators more, or at least more time to like let the artistic vision flow through more, instead of just like, we gotta get those numbers.
See if they can. I mean, that's pretty short. They can jam all that material into 8 episodes.
Yeah. How long Avatar is going to be? About like what, 50 to 45 minutes, I'm guessing.
I think I saw something on Twitter. They said the episodes will vary. Like, some will be 40 minutes, some will be just 30 something minutes.
Okay.
Some will kind of vary, I think, in time.
Yeah. I think it'll be like the One Piece live action, if I'm going to be honest. Like, I think it's going to be cute, and it's going to be like a good way to get people into the source material. But it's like, at a certain level, it's never going to be able to really get on par with the original. But yeah, it's like, I would love to see like a show, like even just have like a special, like a spinoff, or not even a spinoff, but just like a special, like, hey, we're doing a 45 minute, like, this is what this is going to be like, or like almost like how Mickey Mouse would have like almost anecdotal like specials or movies and stuff like that. Like we're putting him in this scenario. It's like I would love a show like Avatar or one or like a show like a lot of people like diss on like the One Piece movies, but like Film Red is fun because it's like it's Oda basically crafting an adventure like for the characters. Like you want to see your characters go on an adventure. Like that's the fun of a series like this. And that's the fun of fantasy.
But here's the run times here. So the first episode will be over an hour. Then you have like 48 minutes, 52 minutes. So each will kind of be close to an hour, kind of. Some are 50, some are 44. Yeah. So that's a little bit there.
Yeah. I love the actor for Iroh. He was on, yeah, he was on Kim's Convenience.
Yeah.
But yeah, he looks great.
I think that's a good choice for Iroh. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty good. That's a good choice. I think he's going to do well. So.
Yeah. Are you excited for any other Avatar news in general, like other potential TV shows, or do you want a movie in the future, or are you like, you're done?
Didn't they say that they were working on like a Kiyoshi movie or animated movie or something like that?
I remember
Maturity told me that, or
I remember them saying they're having a movie in the works. I think it's with the Adult Gang.
Okay. It's going to be the Adult Gang. Okay.
Yeah. Might be something with Kit, but I'm not where, but it's like, yeah, I mean, I would love to see more just like, not like an expanded universe, but like, I would just love to see like an adventure every now and then with these characters.
Yeah. Because I don't read the comics. I don't read the novels or anything like that. You said they're not really worth
that. The novels are much better than the comics. I wouldn't say the novel is better than the TV show, but it's pretty good.
Okay.
It's probably the best romance you're going to get between Kyoshi and Ragni. Firebending gal. I wouldn't even say like it's that great of a romance, but that is the most interesting romance in the show.
Rave Maturity said they're doing three movies, an original cast one, a core one, and a standalone Kyoshi one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'd be interested to see those. Yeah. I still think there's still more material because like Legend of Korra came out what? And it ended in what?
2011?
2011 and then ended what? 2018 or
14? Yeah.
14? So that was a while. That was over 10 years ago. So
yeah,
that was 10 years ago. So yeah, I mean, I'd like to see them with the shows at least complete the cycle. Like, okay, you go to Earth and then you go to Fire and then you complete the whole cycle of the avatars there that you see. Yeah. And if they are doing three movies, I'd like to see that as well. Them doing the three movies there, as long as it's from the original creators.
Yeah. And, you know, are you aware if any of the movies are going to be like theatrical movies or are they going to be like, where are these on Nickelodeon or Netflix, etc.?
Yeah, because if they were to come to stream, wouldn't it be Paramount Plus? Because Paramount owns Nickelodeon.
Right? Maybe it's so complicated nowadays.
Yeah, I think Paramount owns Nickelodeon. I think so.
I remember like a few weeks ago, I was just trying to watch Kung Fu Panda 2, and like I had to like basically go on a wild goose chase just to find it because like Netflix has Kung Fu Panda, but they don't have Kung Fu Panda 1. And 3 in the spinoff series. I looked it up and it's like, oh, it's on HBO Max. I went to HBO Max. It doesn't have it anymore. I'm like, oh, I'll go to Amazon. It wasn't on Amazon. It was on Amazon Paramount Plus subscription. And it's like, this is just way too much to go through right now.
Yeah. And he said, I'm pretty sure they'll be on Paramount Plus. Do you think they would do well if they went to theaters? Do you think they'd make quite a bit of money?
I think almost like the Venture Bros movie, like if it aired like in a specific kind of theater for like a week, and I think you could show like that would be huge because people underestimate like how big the Avatar fandom is. Like I'd go out to a limb and say it's like it's on par with like say the Percy Jackson or like the Harry Potter fandom in terms of like size. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, it's like maybe put one out for like a weekend, just see how big that is. I'm like, oh, we'll expand it for, you know, for like 2 weeks or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, they could maybe do a deal with maybe Netflix and do it like a limited theatrical run and then like put it on the platform or something like that.
Rise of Ninja Turtles that had like a Netflix movie, but it released in some movie theaters.
Rafe says, and it is the original creators when they left this live action adaptation, they started working on this animated movie. Oh, that's good. They can put more attention to that, putting that out, making that good, which I would definitely be up to seeing there. Do you think we ever get like a live action Korra? Seems like everybody just focuses on the original series. Nobody cares about Korra.
Yeah, I don't think we'll get a live action Korra. There is a possibility if like this Netflix show does really, really well, we might get a live action Korra, but it might be totally different. I don't want to see them reboot Korra, but I would love to see some more side adventures with the group. Granted, Korra is like such a, it's considered such like kind of a mixish thing that it's like, I'm not sure how much the creators would want to return to that, or like almost like a reboot series of Korra, but it's like, is that really in the Avatar's like MO? I do remember some of the creators went on to, they made Dragon Prince, which is a, that's a show.
Yeah. I've heard of it. I've never seen it,
though. Yeah, I really don't like it, but like, it's very mixed among the fans, but like, at the same, like that Dragon Prince is almost like a, it's a fantasy night show, but it's like very much made for like people who are specifically fans of Avatar. Not saying like it's going to like be as good as Avatar, or like be like, hey, this is kind of like Avatar. Like, if you didn't see Avatar, you'll like this. But it's like the references and like what the characters tackle on, like stuff like that. Like, it's there's very obvious parallels to Avatar. With Dragon Prince, to the point where characters will just say catchphrases from the Avatar show.
Really? Okay. Interesting. Huh.
Yeah.
Do you like this animation?
I think it gets better in the later seasons, but this is definitely when they were working it out. It's not bad, but it's like there are better like kind of 3D shows out there. But
Avatar: Last Airbender. Yeah. Finally done. Read all the books there, and we'll review the live action series when it comes out.
Yeah. Thursday. Yeah, I hope it's good.
Are you gonna be watching?
Maybe.
yeah. Just a maybe. Yeah. Are they gonna wait for word of mouth first?
Or? Yeah, or like maybe for friends. Like, hey, do you want to watch this with us? Like, yeah. I'll at least watch a few clips online, but.
Yeah, I mean, not gonna lose much. Hey, the anime series is always will be there, and always,
of course.
Yeah,
I do wonder if that's almost their angle of like, when we put out the Netflix live action, that will also drive people to the animated one that's on Netflix now.
Yeah, I wonder if it's spiked since the
live. That's a good question.
I wonder. Probably, yeah.
Because I know actually, I rewatched Korra because of that. It's like the first time in like 5-ish years I decided to rewatch Korra. It's like, oh, yeah. Some of it works better, some of it doesn't. It's always like about kind of retrospective that you have of the series.
Yeah. Do you think so? If they ever did a reboot live action version, there's more to fix with Korra than there is.
Yeah, it's definitely more to tackle, especially with kind of because it happens in Korra a lot more because the character, the show was even like, hey, we're going to be more political. And it's like the way the show kind of handles politics in Korra is a lot more dicier than Avatar. The reason why Avatar was able to get away with a lot of its politics was because it was kind of like a background thing. Mm-hmm. But the way some of Korra's politics, it's definitely a bit more timely. Some of it, I do think it's better than like what other people online would like say it is. But, you know, it's almost, they almost have like a, I would say like the creators have like a Rian Johnson understanding of like politics and kingdoms and like political structures of like, you know, dictators are bad, but democracy is good.
It does make, because I haven't seen it in a while. I did remember having a lot of issues with Korra.
Yeah,
I don't think it's as strong as Avatar.
Like, yeah, I remember not too long ago, the whole non-bending equalist movement was, people started talking about that a lot more. It's like, hey, it's kind of fucked up that you describe the civil rights leader as like kind of a more terrorist figure, or like a more evil figure, like a darker figure. With Amon, it's just, it's one of those things that when you think about the metaphor, it's like, yeah, does this really work?
That's a great episode. I think the episode where they do like the first Avatar, I think that episode is really good. So it's a lot of great episodes.
It was book two was animated by studio, it was animated by both a Korean and a Japanese studio. Which is why at times their like characters are off bottle, but I love the the look of like the Spirit Realm, where it goes very much like Studio Ghibli.
It does, yeah. I mean, now that, because this was in 2012, 2011, yeah, animation,
yeah,
definitely.
Oh, no, totally. Yeah. I would say I do think the action scenes are, and like set pieces are better than Avatar for the most part. Mm. Maybe not all of them, but like a lot of them are like really good in Korra.
All right. Yeah. And if they do another one, I guess, final thing of the night, because it's going to go more into the future, you have to do another Avatar. I mean, do you like that idea of Avatar being more in the future? Or?
Not as much, to be honest. Especially with like technology and like, granted, I do get technology would probably advance to our times by the, you know, earthbending Avatar, and maybe even a bit more so because they have bending for like further infrastructure and like, you know, engineering. But it's one of those things of like Avatar has always had a steampunk aesthetic, but like at what point is it gonna like, is the technology gonna like almost overcome the sci-fi, the fantasy elements? Like when will the fantasy just straight up become sci-fi in this?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you could keep the steampunk kind of aesthetic and make it kind
of. Yeah, maybe. I mean, one of my favorite series, Dragon Ball, basically went from cartoon fantasy to sci-fi, and like, you know, that's one of the most famous series on the planet. So,
which one is that?
Dragon Ball Z. Where it's like, we're just dealing with like demons and weird stuff for now, but then it's like, now we're dealing with space emperors. So who knows? It might be great.
Well, we're interested in making do a show about the Avatar getting canceled on Twitter.
Hell yeah.
Avatar meets social media there.
Yeah.